M30. Number 1B.
When she speaks about divine science, then she gives to that science a different connotation, namely the divine sense. That divine sense means that it has to do with the whole divinity of being, and therefore not just with the infinite one per se, but that it has to do with the infinite one and his infinite idea as being one. And so when the oneness of being is under consideration, she will use the term divine science. So divine science is always that level of investigation where we investigate the absolute oneness of principle and its idea. So you can see the difference between science per se and divine science. Science per se is just giving the science of the infinite principle per se, whereas divine science takes into consideration principle's infinite idea, and that science consists of presenting principle and the infinite idea in their oneness. Principle and idea is one. That's when thought is on the level of divine science. But then you can see that very often we are not just interested in a phenomena which says, what is the oneness of being? But very often we are interested in finding out a specific truth within that oneness of being, where we are interested in a specific divine calculation and computation within that one, where we have a specific problem which we want to work out, positive problem. And therefore not the oneness of being is under consideration, but the finding of a specific true individual fact or truth, small t. And so we have to find a science which computes that specific calculation. Therefore we must have a science that shows us the laws and rules that are at work in order to deduce from the one principle that specific idea. And this is called absolute Christian science, the absolute sense of Christian science, which therefore is interested in investigating the relationship between principle and its infinite ideas. So absolute Christian science is different from divine science. In which way? Divine science says principle and idea is one, and there is just one universe and the oneness of being. Absolute Christian science focuses its interest on defining the relationship between principle and principle's ideas. So whenever we have just one specific relationship of how principle computes a specific idea adapted to the situation, then our thought is dwelling on the level of absolute Christian science. But Mrs. Eddy really presents in the textbook mostly the practical application of this principle to human problems. And so again, she must introduce another aspect of this science, so to say, the practical application of science to the human problem, to the flesh, and that she calls Christian science. So Christian science considers another relationship, namely the relationship between truth and error. It is applied science. It is showing the laws and rules that govern when truth is applied to its opposite, when the ideas of truth are applied to their opposite, to error, to belief, to illusions. And so it is very clear to see that this must be quite a different aspect of science, and this is what she calls Christian science, because it is the saving science, the healing science. You see that? The moment truth is used to correct error, then it is a healing science, a correcting science, an applied science, a practical science, whatever you can call it, but certainly it is something very different than absolute Christian science, which only is concerned with computing truths, facts, without taking any consideration of a error. Just like we would have mathematics, and mathematics primarily is interested, therefore, on the level, say, what we would have absolute Christian science, namely of pure science, of theoretical science. That's the absolute level of Christian science. And mathematics is here in the first place to compute correctly until it comes at the end to a correct answer. Though this pure science of mathematics is the main thing, but it has also another connotation, namely that this true and pure mathematics can be applied to solving or to correcting errors. Then it would be, in our language, Christian science. You know how Mrs. Eddy says, she says the term Christian science relates especially to science as applied to humanity. That's on 127:15. So here you have a very clear definition of what Mrs. Eddy understands under Christian science as compared with science. She says, when I take science and apply it to humanity and to humanity's problem, then I call this science no more just science, then I call it Christian science. Or she says, 471:30, she says, her highest creed has been divine science, which reduced to human apprehension, so that the human can understand it, she has named Christian science. Or she says the term Christian science was introduced by the author to designate the scientific system of divine healing. So you can see, whenever healing is involved, whenever the application to the level of humanity is involved, then it is always a question of how does truth apply itself to its opposite, to sickness, to error. And whenever the relationship has to be scientifically defined between opposites, truth versus error, then she uses the science called Christian science. Yes. I think with these indications it should be quite clear, so to say, that we actually, in our own investigation of the science of being, we sometimes roam in the realm of science itself. Always then, when we ask about the nature of being itself, about the Infinite One, just as the Infinite One, just when we only are concerned, so to say, with knowing what constitutes the Infinite One per se, but then very often we look out into the universe of being and see that the Creator has a creation, but we like to see that they are not separate, that they are one, that Creator and creation is one, that principle and idea is one, and we like to see the oneness of being. And then we are on the level of divine science. But within that oneness of being, very often we are faced with a new situation where we should work out something new, where also our whole life should find its identity, should find its mission, its purpose, its life purpose, every day anew. And therefore we have to have a science which tells us how we can give birth to the true idea. And so suddenly we have the question, how can we deduce from a principle a specific idea and bring forth a specific idea? And so the relationship between principle and infinite ideas are under consideration, which is absolute Christian science. And very often we are faced in our life with a negative problem, which we have to work out. And in order to work out a negative problem, We have to know the truth about this negative problem and have to know how truth has its impact on error, what laws and rules are at work in that relationship between truth and error, between truth and humanity, and that is the whole great field of Christian Science. So when we study the textbook, we have to be aware of these various levels from which he speaks, because we will see that according to the standpoint she takes, either from one or the other level, that she will deal with the one and the same problem differently. Just as I have said, a square can suddenly become a cube. It is only a matter of looking at it from another dimension, or just as a cube suddenly can appear as a square when I reduce the three dimension to a two dimension, and then it appears as a square. If I have, say, a cube, and I project my light, that cube, to the wall, to a two-dimensional surface, then the cube appears on the wall as a square and no more as a cube. But we can't say that that phenomena on the wall is something else than the cube. It's just another dimension of that cube. And this is what life consists of. We know that being is absolutely infinite, and yet our whole experience seems to have to do with a finite concept. So the finite concept must be explained from the point of view of the infinite, but can only be explained by seeing that the finite is a false translation through various dimensions, from the highest dimension to the lowest dimension, or we are faced with an experience in our lives of any kind of discord, be it sickness, be it an accident, be it frustration, or whatever it is. Suddenly we are faced with a phenomena, though we know that we live in the realm of the infinite one, within which this phenomena does not exist, and so we have to find an answer to that dualistic concept of harmony and discord. And if we see the dimensional approach, then we lose any sense of dualism, because then we can see that what happens on the material or human plane is nothing else but the impact of a higher dimension on a false concept. And you see, that is the reason why a very intelligent man, who is trained in the classical logic, that when he reads the textbook, that he will find that that textbook is contradictory. Because she would make, from the standpoint of the old classical reasoning, contradictory statements. She would say, God does not know sickness, and then she would say a few pages later, God will heal sickness. These are, from the old classical point of view, contradictions. Only when we introduce dimensional consciousness, we can see that these statements do not contradict, but that they are complementary, because the one statement is taking the standpoint of absolute Christian Science, and then we can see that God knows no sickness, and the other statement is taking the standpoint or the level of Christian Science, and then the relationship between truth and error is under consideration, and then the whole approach changes, and we have to see the laws regulating the relationship between truth and sickness. So these statements do not contradict the moment we approach the Christian Science textbook in the more modern way of science, in the dimensional way of science, that which is brought forth in any science today more and more. So again, you can see that Mrs. Eddy was far in advance of her age, because in her age, science never was thinking of a dimensional approach. They only had that reductional sense of considering a phenomena. Something was, for the classical logic, something is what it is and can never be something else. In the new new approach of science, which is dimensional, this is no more so. In the new dimensional sense of science, something is and can be something else too. It can be two or three or four things at the same time. And this really has been seen first in the other sciences, except Christian science, in the other science, in physics, when they began to realize that what is called matter can either be stated in terms of quantums or can be stated in terms of waves. Two completely different things, a wave and a quantum, are certainly very opposite to each other from the atomistic standpoint, but they began to see in 1925, really around about that time, that something can be something and at the same time something else. Now, this is dimensional science. And this is the very approach that Mrs. Eddy, already in the last century, was using in order to tackle at all that terrific big subject called being and existence. She could see that being, capital B, is the one infinite one, which is monotheistic and monistic. And then she had to see that we are living in a universe of matter and flesh and mortal mind and human belief and emotion and psyche and everything. And so she had to tackle that terrific subject, which I think philosophy could never solve, how to bring those completely different contradictory standpoints together and show them that they are not contradictory but that they are one. This is a terrific thing. And therefore you can see that all those people who are writing in Christian science and have not seen the dimensional side of Christian science, that they always come to false conclusions in regard to the relationship of spirit and matter. They can never solve that dualistic sense into a oneness sense. Somewhere on the way of their logic they make a great mistake, which they don't naturally feel, and arrive usually at a statement that matter is mind and that mind is matter. Because there is only one, Mrs. Eddy says there is only one, all is mind and is infinite mind, and mind is all in all, therefore matter must be a concept of mind, which is not right, if not seen dimensionally. On the old logic with which these people reason, it's not possible to solve that question, because the old classical logic is inadequate, in a dimensional science. Therefore, since one has begun to see dimensional science, they began to realize that they had to modify the old classical logic of a two-valued logic, and had to see that either one must have a one-valued logic on one level that has its impact on a two-valued logic, or even to see that we can have a three-valued logic or more according to the dimension. And that's why Mrs. Eddy speaks of her discovery as infinite logic. She didn't have a two-valued logic. She could see that being is infinitely dimensional and that therefore the old classical logic with which we reason usually is inadequate to tackle the subject of the one being. If that one being should include every experience in the material, in the human, in the mental, in the psychological, on every level of thought. So here we have a completely new approach to Christian science when we are willing to investigate it from a dimensional sense. You see, also in the field of other sciences, you begin to realize that they can see that they must take in various sciences. For instance, they see that there is a science as such. I think one of the representatives of that line, I would say, is Bertalanffy, who can see that there is only one science of all sciences, a science that includes all sciences with his general systems theory. He could see that there is just one science, one system, a general system, and that we must have a science of system and not the science of physics, biology, chemistry, physiology, and so on and so on and so on, but the science of system itself. And he has made a terrific impact on all the sciences by showing that highest sense of science. Then people are speaking a lot on the level of divine science without calling it divine science, but that they begin to realize that there must be an integration of science and speak about integral sciences, that they can see that sciences must integrate with each other in order to explain a phenomena. You have, for instance, a phenomena called man, and you go with that man into a university, into a big university, and you bring that man to the chemist, and he says, all right, that man is composed of water and of carbon and things like this, and he's just a chemical proposition. And then you take that man to the next door and bring him to the physicist, and he says, oh, yes, I see a lot of atoms running, swirling around, billions and billions of atoms. He's just composed of atoms. And then you bring him to the next door, to an anatomist, and then he says, oh, yes, here it is a structure, bone structure, and I can see exactly what man is. He's structured this and this way, and that distinguishes him from an animal. You bring him to another door, and you bring him to a psychologist, and then he says, well, this is just one great complex of inferiority or something like that. Then you bring him to a theologian, and then he says, oh, here comes a sinner. Oh, yes. So one begins to realize today that there must be a science integrating all these science in order to explain a phenomena like man.